Now I am going to introduce our speakers today, and I'll tell you a little bit about their program. The program is called Simpson Street Free Press. We're going to learn today, they're going to tell us about an after-school program that is not like any other after-school program that you've ever heard of. They're in their 25th year and have won many awards, including being named the 2013 Madison Magazine M-List of Local Innovators. The after-school and summer program is all about writing and investigating and publishing. It's an academic program. The president of the National Committee for the Arts and Humanities says SSFP, their initials, is pioneering new and innovative ways to apply integrated curriculum in after-school settings. We will be meeting four of the leaders of this program. With us today is Taylor Kilgore, who has worked for SSFP since she was in middle school. And now she's the managing editor and a recent graduate of the UW-Madison School of Journalism. Ben is here, and he is the design and technical director and a recent graduate of UW-Madison School of Education. And he also coordinates their math tutoring program. Louise is a longtime volunteer editor. She works one-on-one with students of all ages, helping them revise, edit, and craft articles for publication. Louise has been a journalist, English teacher, reading specialist, and librarian. She is Director Emeritus at School of Library Studies at the UW-Madison. And Jim Kramer is the founder of this program. He is a two-time winner of the NAACP Soldier Award, the Martin J. Woolman Award, and the Joyce Erdman Award for Community Service. We are going to hear now about this amazing program and the things that it has done for our community with closing the achievement gap. All right, we'll welcome them now.
This is quite an honor for us, and throughout the course of our presentation, we'll remind you again that this is quite an honor for us to be here at Angels. This is really something for us. I also want to say that as soon as we walked in, we made our first presentation mistake. We found that it's not a good idea to hand out the newspaper before we give the presentation, because not everybody's reading the newspaper and not listening to us, which is funny. There's lots of dinosaurs and exploding volcanoes, ancient pyramids, all kinds of stuff in our newspaper, so it's well worth a read, and we hope you'll do it. Remember, though, it's not necessarily true that we have the best 11 and 12-year-old staff writers in the history of the planet. That's not true. What you're reading and why it seems pretty good is because what you're reading is their fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh draft. We believe that's where the learning happens in the revision process. As a matter of fact, it's one of our slogans. Never hand in your first draft. I think if you can teach that to a middle school kid, you've probably done good work. Without any further ado, no one wants to listen to me. Everyone wants to listen to Taylor. Well, Taylor, Ben, and Louise. But Taylor's going to talk first. As Pam told you, Taylor started with us as a staff writer when she was in middle school, and she was promoted up the newsroom ranks, becoming a section editor and then a book club coordinator, and now, as an adult, while she was in college, she worked as our managing editor, and now she recently graduated from the UW-Madison School of Journalism. She recently won the Jefferson Award for Community Service in Madison. She gets a lot of attention. She moderates school board debates. But before I embarrass you, why don't I just give you the ball and you run it?
Well, thanks, Jim. That was a great introduction. So I just want to talk a little bit more about Simpson Street Free Press. Pam did an amazing job. She's correct that Simpson Street Free Press is a literacy program based here in South Madison, but we take kids anywhere all around Dane County. We employ students in grades 8, or who are ages 8 through 18, to write in both Spanish and English for 6 of our publications. So 2 of those publications are actually Spanish publications. Students write across the curriculum and investigate core academic subjects. Like you'll see in the newspapers you have there, the subjects are science, history, geography, books. We preach clear and concise writing. Lesson plans include invention strategies, close reading, drafting methods, word choice, and revision techniques. Participating students gain academic confidence. When I was in this program and I grew up through the program, I gained academic confidence. I wasn't always the best student in the class, or I didn't see the importance of, academics and what can an A really get me, throughout the program, I was able to see the importance, especially of writing. I took more AP English courses, honors courses, and, went to the School of Journalism at UW, so it really built my confidence. Besides writing articles for the newspaper, students participate in book clubs, internships in the summer, writing workshops, and get math and physics tutoring by UW-Madison grad students. SSFP is nationally recognized for our award-winning curriculum. Simpson Street Free Press students write, publish, and, of course, plan for college. We believe that academic achievement can be and is for all students. So like Jim was saying, we don't have the best of the best who are writing these articles. We have students all across the board. We have students who are a little bit below grade level, at and then above. But we all work together and help each other and grow together in literacy. And so while we're based in South Madison, we have other newsrooms, including one newsroom at the Capitol Newspaper Building. So it's really cool because those students actually sit right between the Capitol Times reporters and the State Journal reporters. So they really kind of get immersed in that kind of professional setting. And besides that location, we're also located in schools. So we'll teach our curriculum and actually be in the school right after they get done, and they just go down to the classroom to their newsroom. We're open year-round, so while we're an after-school program, we're also open during the summer hours and other school breaks. And, research really shows that this is just as important as a school day. Out-of-school time is extremely crucial to bridging the achievement gap, and that's exactly what we're doing. We have volunteer editors like Louise Robbins, our wonderful volunteer. We have many who work one-on-one with students, write and revise their articles. It's really a fun and rewarding process. I think at some point Louise will talk about that and her experience. I guess I'll kind of take it away, or Jim can take it away for a little bit.
I would just piggyback on a couple of the points that Taylor made so well. There is quite a bit of research these days, in particular over the last 5 or 6 years, that demonstrates that out of school time, what kids do while they're not in the classroom, what kids do outside of the school day is just as important as what they do during the school day. And I was talking to Bob before we started here, and Bob and I guess we're making the point to each other. If you envision a classroom teacher in a busy school setting, hectic school day, how much time does a classroom teacher have to sit one-on-one with a kid, especially a kid who is behind in reading, and sit with that kid one-on-one, sleeves rolled up, sentence and paragraph level, looking at vocabulary, syntax, punctuation, spelling? That's where the learning happens. But there isn't time for that in a typical school day. There isn't even a lot of time in a school day for reading for pleasure. You all know, and we don't harp on this, but we all know that racial disparities, achievement gaps, are absolutely central to what's going on in Madison and Dane County. I don't know about all of you, but I grew up here, left for a little while, came back here to go to grad school and stayed. But this Madison is changing. The Wisconsin has the worst achievement gaps in the country. And Madison has the worst achievement gaps in Wisconsin. This is one of the richest, most well-heeled cities on the planet. And yet, our kids can't read. Critical thinking, reading, literacy, learning to write, learning to communicate, learning to produce product and put it out in the community. Those are 21st century job skills. There are some things that haven't changed since the days when my grandparents used to tell me, you know, you gotta read this. You know, some things haven't changed. Reading and writing and mathematics, we call it, I always go on tangents. We call it the six R's. Reading, writing, math, revision. That's where the learning happens. And Taylor always says, and my other young activist editors always say, these achievement gaps in Madison are a crisis. It's not nagging. That makes it sound like a toothache. It's not. These achievement gaps are cancerous. They will. Bob, we talked about the importance of young people knowing about economics. Without those 21st century critical thinking skills, where are these kids going to go in our economy? What is going to be the economic effect long term in the city of Madison if we don't innovate, think outside of the box is a little bit cliche, but we don't need more layers of bureaucracy. What we need are these kinds of academic programs, and there are some good ones out there. I'm not saying for a minute Simpson Street has all the answers. Lots of good people doing good work. But the best work, the real innovation, the real ideas, are coming from neighborhood-based groups, largely run by parents, driven by volunteer power. That's where the energy is. That's where the innovation is. And I would just say one other thing. Pam called me the founder. I should have worn a better tie. I was one of the people who founded this 24 and a half years ago. I was in grad school. I had to do volunteer work. And one of the choices was the community center in the Simpson Street neighborhood. And I thought that would be cool because I was born in that neighborhood. My parents were still in college at the time. But when I went back there to do volunteer work, that Broadway Simpson neighborhood had changed. It wasn't the neighborhood I grew up in anymore. There were gunshots at night. Almost all the kids were behind in school. And the common lament we heard from parents is the same one we often hear today. The youth programs in South Madison are largely, you know, and this is changing, and there are a lot of people doing good work, but the common lament among parents was there's no practical academic support. Basketball and video games and pizza isn't going to get it done. We want academic support for our kids. They're falling behind in school. They can't write. They get to ninth grade and they have to do a 10-page history for their ninth grade American history class, and they can't do it. We can't go on like that. So this is our little way. Yeah. Well, here's an article about Louis Armstrong. When we took, you know, the kid researched Louis Armstrong. It's music, it's history, and it's writing and it's literacy. It's, it's an honor to be here. Yeah, I mentioned it already. I want to pass the baton back to Taylor for a minute and let her follow up on some of my comments.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, as you can see, we're a very project-based learning model. We are extended school day model, so we don't replicate the classroom, but we support the classroom. So the things that we're doing, you know, the students don't feel like they're in school. It's really a job for them. They come to work, and they know what their duties are, and they get their articles done, and they get their articles published. And at the same time, they feel good about it when they sit down with someone like Belize, who sits down with them and works one-on-one with them. So students are having these, what we kind of call one-on-one writing conferences with editors of all levels. There's high school editors that will work with our younger middle school and elementary school students. There's college-age editors, kind of like myself. And then we also have our volunteer editors who consist of, you know, teachers, journalists, authors, you know, people who just really like to write and work with kids. And by the way, this article by about Louis Armstrong is from an 11-year-old, and she did amazing on this. So, you know, we're very rigorous, but at the same time, we make writing doable. And that comes from being able to sit down with a student and teach them these skills in a setting where they feel like they're learning, and in a setting where they feel like they're responsible for something. All of the students as young as 8 years old, 7 years old, get paid. They all get a stipend check, and so they are, you know, rewarded for their work.
I'd like to just piggyback on a couple of things that Taylor just said, and then I want to do a little exercise, a little investigative journalism with you guys, because I see a ton of wisdom in this room, and thank God at least 70% of the people are actually watching me. That's pretty impressive. I want to piggyback on what Taylor said. From the very beginning, the question was, how do you get kids? Some of our kids are as young as second and third grade. We have a lot of middle school kids. And then our high school kids who stay with us advance up the newsroom ranks. They apply for bigger jobs. It's just like the real world. To the kids, they don't say, I'm going to my after-school program. Our kids say, I'm going to work. And even the second and third graders have their own business cards. And if they get a promotion, they get new business cards. Instead of staff writer, it might say science editor. Or it might say book club coordinator. We've won lots of awards, as Pam pointed out. Always, never for how handsome the director is, but always for our curriculum. that the curriculum that we have honed and refined over the years and the measurement tools we use to carefully watch student progress. So I want to make that point. How do you get kids to want to work on writing, spelling, and grammar after school? Especially on a nice day like today. Well, you tell them it's a job. You have responsibilities. You are expected to complete assignments in a timely manner. You're expected to know the office systems, the newsroom systems, slug sheets, and where to save articles, particular kinds of articles, on what part of the server. The kids have to learn those skills. And the Taylor used another one of our mantras, academic confidence. Our kids, this is rigorous stuff. And we take, we're all three of our locations are on the south side, and most of our kids come from very modest income backgrounds. And probably 80% or so are students of color. Like we take kids of all colors. We don't care. We don't, it's so counterproductive to segregate kids during out-of-school time programs. You'll see that a lot in Madison, too. Here's a program for black males who are 16 and live on Allied Drive. We believe that the best programs refuse to segregate kids. The last thing I want to say is part of the formula is that as they move up, they gain such pride in they gain such academic confidence, and when they get promoted, part of their job description, all the kids have job descriptions, part of their job description is you are expected to sit with your younger, less experienced peers and help them polish their second and third draft. When it gets to the fourth and fifth draft, then it's usually Louise Taylor. But it's that roll up your sleeves, peer-to-peer culture of excellence and achievement that is getting the results that we get. I want to give time for a conversation, for questions here. I'd like to sort of segue into that by doing a little investigative journalism exercise. And then I'll have the microphone and we can come around and if it's okay with you guys. I mean, if you already don't like us, we could leave. But let's get a little conversation going. Louise and Ben, would you mind bringing your chairs up front here?
Can I just stand up?
I'm going to play the role of the investigative journalist, and I'm going to ask you guys to join me. If you have questions, then I'll just come around and give you the microphone, because nobody else is probably sick of listening to me talk at this point. Can you bring your, if you want to stand?
I'd rather stand myself. Chairs? I'd like to stand, if you don't mind.
Okay,
I've been sitting too long.
Well, let me start with this. I want to say, Taylor, let me start with Louise, since Taylor, you've taught coloring. Louise, your background, you've taught at all levels. You've taught college. You've been a classroom teacher at various levels. And now you're director emeritus for the UW School of Library Sciences. This is, as you know, a curriculum.
Right.
It's focused on literacy. It depends on rigor. It's got lots of little nooks and crannies in the curriculum. You sit with kids, you know, sometimes fourth and fifth graders, sometimes high school kids. When we call it a curriculum, can you explain what you see when you're one-on-one with a kid? What are you trying to teach the student while you're working with them one-on-one?
Well, is it on? Yeah. Okay. When I start working with a student, usually we're doing close reading. They may have just received an article that from which they are going to derive their own work. It might be one article. If it's a younger kid, it might be more than one. As they get older, they have to synthesize from various sources. But we do a close reading because often the vocabulary of an article might be bigger than the child's vocabulary. So we do that close reading, making sure they know all the words, they understand them, they understand the context in which they're found. One really great example of that is that one time we came across the word ice capades. And the context in which it was a sports context, and there were other people's names listed, but the ice capades have been gone for a while, right? So this kid did not know that ice capades was an event. It sounded, in the context, like a name. And that led to all kinds of misunderstandings of the article. So we had to go back and talk about what the ice capades were. So in addition to learning vocabulary, they were learning a little history of sport. Yeah. And often we do things like that, and that's really fun for me because I like telling those stories. After they get their close reading done, I ask them to think about what each paragraph means and what the important parts are that they want to emphasize in their writing, because often the articles are longer and more complicated than the writing they will be able to achieve at a particular level. So they have to go through and think critically about what it is they have been reading. And then they have a sheet. Do you have a picture of the form?
Yeah, I do.
They have to sort out a who, what, when, where, and why of that particular article, which is harder than you would think sometimes. And then they have to think about what they want to put as the main idea and their paragraphs 1, 2, 3, or maybe more, and their conclusion. And I try to work with them on saying, okay, you're going to begin and end kind of at the same place, but you can't say it the same way. So your in-between is your meat and the sandwich, right? So the critical reading part and then the planning part are the first two steps in this part. Then they go off by themselves and write, and then they come back to an editor and get their first responses. Sometimes the editor says, you've missed the point, go back and do it again, basically, but not in so many words. You know, you try to help them understand what the main point was and where they went astray. My favorite example of that is a young man who I first encountered when he was in about fourth grade, perhaps, and we were writing about money. And do you know how hard it is to define what a check is? You don't think about it at all. But we had to look up what the word check means. When you write a check, it's really a promise to pay. You know, I didn't think about that at all until I had to look it up with him. But we struggled with this the money concepts. And when he got what I thought was a pretty good little brief article, the next editor said, you need to write a lot more about money. There's a lot more to say about this. So the article kept growing. It took about 6 weeks, I guess, to get this into a big, meaty article. When it was done, it was a great article, and the student, Chris, had learned so much that when it came time to do a speech at the Madison Club, he was ready to do it. And boy, did he ever shine. He knocked my socks completely off. Pretty funny to be sitting barefoot in the Madison Club, believe me. And he is now an editor himself. He's in junior high or high school?
He's in high school.
He's in high school now, and he's a junior editor, and he's showing up there every Wednesday to work with Wright Middle School kids, and they listen to everything he says. I'm spellbound. He's one of my favorite examples because he's turned from a kind of struggling student to a star. And I see that repeatedly. And that's what the curriculum builds on these, within each lesson, on these skills, but then there are different curriculum topics, science, geography, history, arts, sometimes field trips to the art museum, a variety of ways of going through things that will support their work in school, but also make them independent learners. Sorry, I talked too long.
No,
that's
okay.
That's perfect.
You're way better than me. Let me tell you. I want to go back for just a second to the concept of academic confidence. It's not just we as adults who know about achieving gaps. We work with kids every day at all of our sites who know achievement gaps instinctively. Taylor, could you speak to academic confidence? What happened to you? What were you like? What did you encounter when you first joined Simpson Street in middle school?
Yeah, so when I first joined Simpson Street Free Press in middle school, I wouldn't say I necessarily volunteered my time, but my mom heard about the program, and so she was like, you know, you're going to go work on your reading and writing after school. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess. I'm going to listen to my mom, of course. But it wasn't something that, you know, I felt like I needed to do. I didn't see, you know, the importance of, you know, working on writing after school setting. You know, I felt like I did enough of that in school. So, you know, I couldn't really see, like many students my age at that time, I couldn't really see the future of, you know, what can this do for me in the long run. So throughout my time at Simpson Street Free Press, I started off as a staff writer. I, you know, wrote various articles from the Goodman Library and why I like it to the Edmund Fitzgerald. And so as I, you know, was working with wonderful editors like Louise and, you know, the older students, you know, it really built my confidence to see, you know, I can write. You know, Jim used to tell me all the time, you know, you're smart. You can do this. Like, you're really smart. And you just need to, you know, use this, and this is how you can, you know, work on your writing, this is how you can get better. And I did get better. And I noticed that confidence in me when, you know, I was the, you know, only person of color in my honors English courses or my AP English courses, you know, and I kept on going from there with my confidence in terms of my writing. And, you know, it built so much that I've never really considered journalism as a career or something to study. And so by the time, you know, I was in college, you know, I've, you know, experienced and, you know, learned so much from writing and saw how powerful journalism and also knowing how to write well was that, you know, I thought that this would be something that I have to pursue. This is something that I have to go into college for. This is the perfect major. I always will encourage anybody to go into journalism. And now I feel like I can do anything. And my confidence, you know, has grown throughout the years. It still does. And now I kind of put that confidence on other people. I worked with younger kids myself at Simpson Street Free Press. I'm editing, and I'm saying those same encouraging words and teachings that were taught to me.
I've had occasionally people say to me, what do you mean 21st century job skills? There are no jobs or daily newspapers anymore. Daily newspapers are struggling. I'll say it again. Bob, you and I were kind of talking about this. It's the ability to think, the ability to think critically, the ability to communicate, the ability to work in teams, the ability to work independently, the ability to conduct research. Taylor has a degree in journalism. She's had that degree for, 3 months now. Getting job offers from all over. Everybody's calling me, how can I hire Taylor? Thanks a lot. The UW Law School wants it, you know, the matter of fact, one of our other editors just entered law school and is in her first year of law school. The Wall Street Journal listed like the top 10 undergraduate majors, journalism is number one. These are the 21st century skills. I want to go back to Louise for just 1 second, if you don't mind. I'd like to ask you, Louise, as you know, director of UW.
Yeah, okay.
Director Emeritus of the UW School of Library Sciences. Do you see a connection between what I'm saying about literacy and critical thinking and job skills? Because some people will say, well, we don't really need libraries. The books are always, you can read all the books you want to read online. Do you see the connection I'm trying to drive? How important is literacy, do you think, in the 21st century?
That's a pretty loaded statement question, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say it's loaded.
The fact that I drive to Stoughton once a week to tutor a low-literate woman should tell you how important I think literacy is. Her life depends on it. Literacy is probably, and that's literacy in all forms, visual literacy, media literacy, print literacy, numeracy is the toolkit for everybody and all what everybody needs. Can't really get along without it. It's just really crucial. I used to tell my students in the what is now the iSchool, the School of Library and Information Studies, that the one thing that would set them apart from other people applying for the same job is if they have a knockout application letter that shows that they can write. Because writing is an integral part of librarianship and an integral part of almost every job that I can think of. Tool and die makers have to be able to read and write. So, you know, we're talking about a central skill. I want to say something else about Taylor, though, while I've got the mic.
You go ahead.
One of the things about Taylor and some of the other editors, Ben and the others, is that they provide a model for the students who come behind them. Now, Taylor said she couldn't have a vision of what the future might look like. Our students have a vision of what the future looks like because of people like this. And people say, I want to be like Taylor. I want to be like Ben. I want to be able to use the computer the way Ben does. I want to be able to teach the way Taylor does. I want to have Taylor's poise and her confidence. And they really are conscious of what it means to set their sights on the next level up of being an editor. And some of the people you've been seeing in these, that's Deidre, but Deidre has graduated from our leadership, and she's now teaching in the Madison schools.
Deidre still works for us in the summer with our book clubs. Deidre also started with, Deidre's on the left.
Who's that?
Arushi's now on the left. Both of them started with us when they were younger and stayed with us through college as editors. Deidre just recently finished her master's degree in the School of Education and is now a middle school English teacher at Blackhawk Middle School, but still works for us in the summer. Arushi is also in graduate school. Both started with us when they were younger. So Louise, again, is pointing out something crucial, is that, because we've got these wonderful, mostly retired senior volunteers like Louise, but all kinds of volunteers, plus we have high school and college age editors, we can flood the newsroom floor. If we have 30 or 35 middle school kids in a room, we're flooding the newsroom floor with that practical one-on-one academic support because the older students take it so seriously. That's in their job description. They're proud of what they do, and they do pass that on to the next generation. We call it a professional development staffing pipeline. Some people might call it role model. And whatever you call it, it works. And let me just say, the parents love it. The parents are our biggest supporters. Parents love Simpson Street. Ben, could I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
This is Ben Rutterson. His background is in education, but also mathematics and computer science. we always struggle to come up with an appropriate job title for him because he's kind of jack of all trades. For instance, I had pet janitor on my business card. But then recently, we've always worked with a school in South Madison called Glendale Elementary School, some of the lowest reading scores in the Madison School District. The school struggles. About a year ago, they asked us to take on 14 or 15 of their fourth and fifth graders, most of whom are the students that are most behind in reading. And they warned us ahead of time, these kids are a handful. You're going to have all kinds of behavior issues. And they talked to me about Keon and Lachey, and they said, we'll be surprised if these kids last 2 weeks with you. Ben has been, there's something about Ben, the kids, especially the younger kids, the third, fourth, and fifth graders, just love Mr. Ben. Ben, Keon and Michelle are still with us?
Oh, yeah.
Michelle's reading scores have skyrocketed in the last year.
Oh, yeah, she's in, I'd say, about two grade levels worth in the past
year. Two grade levels above where she was a year ago. But the staff at Glendale School told us that she wouldn't last 2 weeks, that she wouldn't want to do this kind of rigorous hands-on writing. I credit, by the way, Ben and Nadia and Sarah Busecci is one of our editors on the left there with a pencil in her hand. Those are two of our, Sarah is a freshman in college. Amy on the right is La Follette High School junior. They're working with a middle school student on a story. That's an example of what we call close reading. Here, talk about flooding the newsroom floor. Here's a middle school kid who gets two editors at once. You know, some kids might think, oh, boy, that's fascinating. But our kids think that's good because they want to get their fifth, sixth, seventh draft done because they only get paid if they produce a piece of work that's good enough for us to publish. There's another part of the formula that works, by the way. The amazing middle school kid will do $15. They'll go through a six-week assignment writing about chemistry if they think they can get $15. But this is a job. We market it to the kids as a job. Ben, tell us about your experience with these kids at Glendale, these kids who come to us from Glendale Elementary School. Why do they like you so much?
I mean, I have no idea. I guess I work with them. I sit with them. I treat them as individuals. You know, that's what you got to do. You can't. You sit down. You learn their name. You learn what they like. You learn what they're interested in.
I came in. I always try to get there when the Glendale kids are there, because you know, I was 17 years a high school baseball and basketball coach. I know how to bark at kids when they need it. But Ben had the back of one of our computers torn open, and here's this kid who was late to the thing.
Yeah.
Another kid, they said, was way behind. They wanted to, he had a what was called a behavior education plan, an IEP, individual education plan. Langston was behind. Here's Ben, he's got the back of the computer torn open, and he's showing the kid the circuits inside the computer, and this Langston kid, a fifth grader, is just mesmerized. Now he always comes. He comes in at all times. We'll be there on Saturdays, the kid will show up. Michelle, too. They told us she wouldn't last 2 weeks. Now she shows up all the time. She just comes over. She wants to be there. She's proud of her work. But think about, I think he, Langston happens to be a hands-on learner. He's fascinated about how the technical and mechanical innards I find a lot of kids are, we have floor-to-ceiling maps all over our newsroom. I find a lot of kids are visual learners. They love looking at maps. We have all kinds of geography quiz games that we play. We have a thing called Graham's Grammar Game, a little fun way to get kids thinking about grammar. We have Word of the Week. High school kids will post words of the week on the wall, and then the younger kids have to learn that word. We have Location of the Week. Last week it was Madagascar. So I'm wondering if any of you have questions for us. Okay, that means you get the microphone.
I'm wondering how your program attracts kids, how they get into your program, and also how do you finance the program?
Well, I don't know if you want to talk about part of that or not.
No.
Well, we never have to recruit, and so, like, you know, questions like that, and we kind of, you know, laugh to ourselves because we never have to, you know, recruit at all and go out to schools and kind of do all that thing. It's very word of mouth. You know, we have kids and their parents coming in, you know, all the time, you know, wanting to be a part of the program. Unfortunately, we have a very long waiting list. You know, I have a stack behind my desk of, you know, about 100 applications for our various programs to get in the program. And so, it's all a lot of word of mouth. We have, you know, teachers recommending students and parents who want their kids in there. Or, you know, a friend will tell, you know, their other friend, you know, to come work with them. You can get a job, and they're, you know, in seventh grade. So, and a lot of the financing comes from grants, but also we have so many supporters that will donate to us. And, you know, we get a lot of funding from just, you know, little checks here and there, too.
I would just say that I would just say, piggybacking on Taylor, the short answer is we don't get much funding. We have 25 years, we've never had a paid grant writer, never had a development department, we don't do fundraising events, we don't do gala dinners, we don't do any of that. Our ethos is our product has to be the best, because we're not going to be professional fundraisers. As Taylor says, we're pretty good writers, actually. So we do write grants. But again, that's usually my wife and I sitting around the kitchen table on a Sunday afternoon writing the grants. We have 25 years, but we've never had professional fundraisers. 99.5% of the money that we bring in goes directly into our kids' programs. We don't have executives who get paid. We have third and fourth graders who get paid. I want to pass the microphone here to this gentleman first, and then I'll come over and see you, okay?
My question is a simple one. Occasionally, parents will walk a child into this program, but they're just not cut out
of that
type of thing. How do you
handle
that?
I can't hear. Can you hear that?
A little bit.
How do you handle
someone's
that?
You know, did you hear it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say to that that we have, it is rigorous. But every kid can do this. Every kid can work at their own pace. If a kid, I'm not really into writing, I might have him write a story about Michael Jordan or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Aaron Rodgers. I don't believe in 100% success in anything, but I would say that we are very, very proud of the percentage of kids who do improve. And I would also say is that you can always, I believe sparking lifelong learning. If it takes a kid 7 months to finish an article, fine. If he's interested in why that volcano exploded or why the Edmund Fitzgerald sank to the bottom of Lake Superior or why Michael Jordan was able to win 5 championship rings, we can find something that makes the kid curious. They don't have to come out of our program being the best writers. Not all kids are going to choose the traditional 4-year track. But very quickly, and I'll give you the microphone, I sat at a recent luncheon with 3 members of the Wisconsin Statewide Electricians Union. And we were talking, and they said, our 3-year apprenticeship program to be an electrician is far more rigorous than freshman year at UW-Madison. We just can't get kids into our apprenticeship program. They need to know how to think critically. They need to know how to write. They need to have a background in mathematics. Not every kid's going to want to go the traditional 4-year college route. But no matter what goals you're pursuing in the 21st century economy, you've got to have this, we call it this platform of literacy and confidence in your own intellectual abilities. And in that sense, sir, I think we get pretty darn close to 100% success rate in at least encouraging kids to see themselves as thinkers and doers.
While we've been talking, I've been scanning your newspaper. If the professional news writers had the rigorous standards that you do, the newspapers would look a whole lot better these days. You read headlines and you say, what is that? I don't know what that means. And these are all very clear, and the grammar in the newspapers is deplorable these days. And this is beautiful. So I compliment you so much on what you have achieved.
Let me tell you, at 3:30 in the morning the night before our print deadline, Ben, Taylor, me, 2 or 3 of others sitting around our newsroom on our 14th cup of coffee trying to meet this deadline, and we thought we'd caught everything. And I probably shouldn't tell you this, but if you go through and look, you'll see we missed a few things. But we did the best we could. For instance, I'll bet you know that we use New York Times style for headlines. Four words, 4 letters or more capitalized, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But did you know the word is? Is capitalized in headlines? And do you know why? Is a verb, and therefore is capitalized. So yeah, we have what's called a style guide. We use the Associated Press style guide, which is about 300 pages. We boiled it down to 1. But the kids have to learn it, but kids actually like it. It's a lesson plan. The kids, once they've been there for 6 or 7 months, they know how to go to the style guide and see, do I use quotation marks here? Do I use italics? Do I write out 21? Or can I use the numeral 21? That kind of stuff, you can make that fun for kids.
Yeah.
People who would like to. Thank you. Taking the microphone away from
you. You make a pretty good Oprah.
What you said about newspapers, I agree. I have a degree from a school of education here in Madison, like you.
Would you talk more closely into the mic?
Okay, yeah, and I taught at all levels, including college. Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And I want people to have the right funds and support, but I tell them I grew up in a war-torn country where we had nothing. We had no books, no pencil and paper, and we were for a while writing on pieces of slate with another piece of slate. We put the numbers and the letters on the piece of slate. And later when we had everything, we thought it was heaven. And Germany didn't get libraries until the early 70s. And I took my children to libraries here. I thought it was heaven to have all these libraries. So I don't want people to give up. While you're waiting for funds, please use anything you can for education.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
We have an ongoing, one of our ongoing columns at Simpson Street is called My Favorite Library. And kids have to write about what library they like. And we had some of our college students take the kids on a tour of libraries at local colleges. Someone else would like the microphone at this point?
Yes, over there.
Okay.
I used to move a lot quicker.
He's getting it.
So I snuck in a little bit late, so maybe you answer this, but I used to see the Simpson Street Press at various locations, and I'm just wondering where you normally circulate it, because I missed seen it wherever, you know, where I am, haunts that I go to, but it would be nice to know where I can pick it up again and stuff and read it.
Well, a couple of years ago, I guess I had to make a decision. We, as Taylor has pointed out, we have waiting lists, extensive waiting lists at all of our locations. We have about 260 or 265 kids of various ages at various locations now. And the hard copy printing, we used to do 21,000 copies once a month and circulate those to about 300 locations all over Dane County. It was the most expensive thing we did. And I had to make a decision. Reduce the frequency with which we do hard copy, old-fashioned newspapers, which I personally like. Every morning I got to get up and look at my sports page. We still do some of these hard copies, but we primarily publish online. If you Google Simpson Street Free Press, we'll come up all over the place. We have 7 different newspapers, including 2 bilingual newspapers. We have 2 newspapers that are specifically for elementary students. While we still do some hard copies, the circulation you just wouldn't believe. We would put 2 bundles of papers at the Kohl's grocery store at Park Street. They'd be gone by the end of the day. And the driving around, and it was just way too expensive if we wanted to add 125 new students to our various programs. Does that answer your question? And frankly, boy, do I get an earful from my mom and dad. You gotta do more of those hard copy newspapers. And Jane Colton wants to have the hard copy newspapers. Frankly, as much as we hope you guys will like our newspapers, it's really aimed at young people. And our readership has exploded over the last 3 or 4 years as we've been using more and more of the online platforms. As much as we would love you guys to be regular readers, please, we really want to reach the 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. As Taylor said, Learning is fun, cool, and doable. And we can get that message out to thousands of Dane County kids through online publishing. Anybody else want a microphone? Oh, our time is up. But we'll be around if you want to talk, if anyone wants to talk a little more.
Ben, say that.
Talk about we want to thank them all for coming and sharing this amazing program that is definitely closing the achievement gap. I think I'm going to lose sleep on those 100 kids who are on that waiting list, but they are touching so many young kids, and Taylor and Ben and such wonderful role models. So we thank you for coming so much. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Pam, for having us, and Adding Angels for having us. We really appreciate you listening to us for all this time and putting up with us. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. There are copies of individual articles up here if you all wanted to see more, if you want to talk later. But thank you.
And don't forget to read our online publications. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot.
Thank you so much.